Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. And today I welcome Heather White, the producer and co-director of the film Who Pays the Price? The Human Cost of Cheap Electronics, which follows the stories of injured and chemically poisoned young Chinese workers in factories that manufacture the world's leading electronic brands. Their experiences underscore the human cost being paid by workers globally to conserve American consumers' demand for cheap gadgets and devices. Hello, Heather.
Hello, Cheryl.
This is quite an important discussion we're going to have today. The implications are very far-reaching. Heather, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, this is a show with an open-minded approach to mindful living and living healthy through understanding that during this time and spiritual revolution, we are evolving as conscious citizens of the world and must work cooperatively to ensure the health, success, and well-being of our families in the world community. Heather White is a former network fellow at Harvard University's Edmund Safra Center for Ethics from 2011 to 2014, and she has channeled her investigative work on transparency in global supply chains, leading to improved industry standards in social auditing and verification practices. Heather, as the founder and former executive director of Verité, Verité is a nonprofit organization, and Heather has won international recognition for her efforts to reduce labor violations in factories engaged in production for American consumer brands. In today's show, we will discuss the film Who Pays the Price, and we'll focus on the struggles for justice in unthinkable conditions where worker rights are denied and a government crackdown has curtailed efforts to organize labor. We will be concerned with understanding that excessive consumerism creates extreme work conditions in countries where young workers fight for their health and their futures, and often factories engage in cover-ups that include denying that they ever worked in them. Workers and family members expose these conditions, and we are given an opportunity to recognize that it will take a cooperative effort by many to protect these workers in any country, as it is a worldwide concern. Heather, I often ask my guests to think back to their childhood, to remember what might have been happening at that time that ultimately led them to becoming the person they are now and the work and values they hold dear. Can you tell us something about your beginning interests?
Well, nobody's asked me that question, Cheryl, before. That's so interesting. Yes, I think that my interest in China in particular developed when I was about 5 years old and we lived in a neighborhood in Boston, Massachusetts, where there were a lot of recent Chinese immigrants. And my father made friends with several of them. I visited their homes. And I was just fascinated by the sound of the language they spoke. They were speaking Cantonese. And the smells coming from their kitchens. I'd never smelled Chinese food before. I thought it smelled absolutely amazing. And I decided I wanted to learn Chinese. And that just stuck with me my entire childhood. And when I got to college, I became a Chinese major. But my interest in workers and factories came about, I think, because my father was the deputy director of migrant education for the state of Massachusetts at a time when a lot of migrant workers were coming up from Puerto Rico to work in the cranberry fields in southeastern Mass around Cape Cod. And they had a lot of challenges as a result of ocean spray, not wanting to give them labor rights, not wanting to provide for education for their children, not wanting to provide restroom facilities in the areas where they were harvesting the cranberries. So I heard a lot about those issues and the struggles of workers, and my father's organization used to bring all sorts of supplies to them because they couldn't afford to buy them on their own, different kinds of food and toiletries, that sort
Well,
of thing.
Heather, what you're saying is very interesting because, yes, we are the product of our environment and social and familiar programming. But you were also talking about you had an affinity right away for the Chinese culture because I believe we come into this life as soul beings who carry with us the remembrances of many past experiences beyond this life. Or finite place in an infinite type of energy. And that's why I always ask that question, because it's very interesting to see how at an early age we already have an intuitive sense of where we want to go, what we want to accomplish in this world, and some of the people that we need to be with. And I don't believe anything is random. I think there is a higher plan, destiny, and calling for each of us. And what you just said certainly seems like that was true for you in the beginning. How did you start on this quest to make this particular film?
I've been working on labor rights issues for many years, running the nonprofit that you mentioned, Verite, that inspects factories and looks at labor standards and whether or not the factories are complying with local labor laws and regulations around child labor and working hours. I did that for more than 10 years. But very early on when I was running that organization, I saw a newspaper article that said that clinics had been established in southern China to provide for emergency care for teenagers who were becoming paralyzed and falling into comas in factories as a result of being exposed to toxic chemicals. And I never saw any follow-up about that, and I thought it was a fascinating kind of development if, in fact, the teenagers who should be in school but, in fact, are in factories making consumer products are giving up their health. I wanted to know more about it.
On some level, we know that there's something wrong with that picture. Right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That stuck with me. How many newspaper articles do you remember 10 years later that you wanted to follow up on?
Well,
you know,
because it was important, and you had the training and the wherewithal to go forward and do something about this issue. Can you tell us what goes on in the electronics manufacturing industry?
That leads to the workers being harmed as profiled in my film?
Yes.
Well, what happens is that the pricing negotiations between the U.S. brands, the Korean brands, the companies that are producing all of our electronics, and the factories result in factories being under tremendous price pressure. The brands are usually much larger than the factories. They've got global reach. They've got billions of dollars in annual revenues, and they're doing business often with individual factories that don't have nearly that kind of power. And they have to basically accept the prices that are being offered by the brands. And so once an order is accepted by a factory, they do everything they can to figure out how to make that product line as cheaply as possible. And so what we're seeing in China is long work hours, overtime pay not being paid, the cheapest solvents and chemicals being used for the necessary cleaning and wiping down of the cell phone screens and the wiping down of the housings of the cell phones so that they can be totally clean and devoid of lint or dust or bits of plastic. In the shoe factories, that extends to bits of leather, you know, moving to the next stage of assembly. And what results is the factories are choosing to use very cheap, very toxic chemicals that they don't regulate. They don't provide masks and gloves and ventilators for the workers because that would be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The workers that they use at that stage of the production process are the ones with the least amount of skill and experience, so that's the teenagers that come into the factories. There are more than 12 million teenagers every year who leave their homes in the countryside and move to the cities to find jobs and experience life in an urban area, and a lot of them are ending up in the electronics factories. These factories are massive. There are 200,000, 300,000 workers now in some of these facilities.
And you do say that exposure to these dangerous chemicals can lead to cancer, leukemia, nerve damage, liver and kidney failure, reproductive health issues, and all depending on the chemical and level of exposure. All right, so we're going to get to questions to show how this has to change. Who are some of the people who have been helpful and influential in helping you make this film and bring awareness about this problem to the public?
Well, the outpouring has just been amazing from people who found out about what I'm working on, coming forward and wanting to give a donation. What happened was when I realized that this problem was so much bigger than I had anticipated, with a colleague in China, we made a 10-minute film in April of 2013 for the purpose of fundraising. And I came back to the States and showed it at a conference in San Diego. And the people who were in the room, after they saw the trailer, committed to providing $50,000 for me to go back to China and complete filming of a trailer that would be put up on YouTube. So I did that. The trailer went up in March of this year, 2014. The studio was provided for by a woman in New York who is very supportive of the project. There's a foundation in London called the Bertha Foundation that supports documentary films for social justice. They gave me $30,000 to be able to continue with the project. We've now shot over 100 hours of footage, and they're hoping to complete the feature-length documentary in early 2015. But when people hear about it, Peter Coyote, the actor, heard about it recently and immediately offered to do the voiceover narration for the film. And he just completed today the Indiegogo video that we're going to be putting up on the internet. It's a crowdfunding fundraising website.
That's so wonderful. And when I received your package from the media, I was so anxious to do this show because it may be something that many people are not aware of on a day-to-day basis, but anywhere where people are suffering, when we have so much technology and so much wisdom and so many resources, and it has to hurt our heart to know that these things are going on. These could be our children. They are our children. It really doesn't matter where in the world they're suffering. Humane people have got to step up to the plate, and I'm so glad to hear you have so many people supporting you. Now, there is a story of Ming Kunpeng that you talk about in the film, who started working at ASM Pacific Technology, which is a longtime Apple chip supplier, and he was only 19 years old. Can you tell us something about him and what happened?
Yes, he went in to work at this factory, which was rare in that it was 100% owned at the time by a Dutch multinational, and worked there for just a few years when he came down with leukemia at the age of 22. And at that point, his health was destroyed. He didn't get a good diagnosis that there was anything that could be done in terms of a cure. He never went into remission. So basically, he had to leave the factory. His health was highly compromised. He had to get a bone marrow transplant. The factory refused to admit responsibility for these workers having gotten the leukemia and the exposure to these toxic chemicals in the workplace. And so they have a battle of trying to prove that, in fact, their illness was caused by the chemicals in the factory that they were exposed to on a daily basis.
And is work going on now to help those factories document the numbers of people and the medical situations so that they can conclude that it is coming from them?
Not at all. In fact, this company is one of the worst actors I've ever encountered in 20 years of being involved in manufacturing in China and elsewhere around the world. This factory still refuses to admit that he was ever exposed to benzene, which was the diagnosis from the hospital. He did receive an occupational diagnosis, which is the official term that you have to get in order for the factory to be accountable for the hospital bills and the treatment and the medical care. So he did receive that diagnosis, but still the
But
factory is
still, he
fighting
got
it.
no help.
He got no help. Finally, the company did agree to reimburse some of the medical expenses, and they did as a result of pressure coming from the outside, because once we found out about this case, we started writing letters. I got in touch with Dutch television. They've done some programs about it. Finally, the company did agree to make a payout, a relatively high amount compared to what most workers get if they are even successful in getting anything from their factories. He got $125,000,
But it was
but
too late because
it was too late.
I read on December 28, 2013, despite the supportive efforts of his entire family to get him ongoing care and medication, he committed suicide by jumping from the roof of his building. So
Yes,
it
he
was
jumped from the hospital
too
roof.
late. So
Yeah.
sad. It's just
Very tragic.
so
His family
sad.
had given up everything. I mean, if you could imagine what you would do if you had a child or a close family
Well,
relative.
of course,
You know, you would
yeah, we
they
all.
moved, they spent every penny they had. They were all crammed into a little two-room apartment, six people. I mean, it was just unbelievable the sacrifices this family's made for their son's illness and hopes for recovery, which didn't happen, and the factory literally fought them every step of the way.
Well, we do know that there are an estimated 130 million workers who are migrating from their homes in the countryside. And this is roughly, to see how big it is, half the U.S. population. And an estimated 12 million end up in these factories. So we're talking a very big number here. So they're young. They're trying to advance. They're trying to help their families. They're trying to do what their country gives them, allows them to have to move forward in developing some type of life. And it's going to change. We know
I
this is
hope
going to
so.
happen.
I
Oh
hope
yeah.
it will
Oh
change.
yeah. This is going to change. And when and where is this film, when will it be available for viewing, the completed film?
If we're successful with our Indiegogo campaign, it should be ready for release in early 2015, sometime during March, we hope to have it out. That doesn't mean it will have gotten picked up for distribution by television and by the outlets that we're hoping will
Well,
purchase it, but the film will be done, and we'll certainly have the information on our website, on Facebook. We have a very active Facebook page that has thousands of people every day reading our posts, and
that's what
the
we
word will
do.
be out.
We produce it, we alert people to what's happening, we send out the intention to get others to cooperate. We're working now more in a world of cooperation than competition. Now, competition is what's causing part of this problem with the factories who are hoping to make things cheap enough so that they can sell more of them. But we're moving into a different mindset, world set, heart-based set of cooperation versus, how can I say it, competition, which is not going to be successful for our evolution as people in the 21st century. Right, so we're working for that. And who are the companies we are focusing on in the film?
Well, the largest U.S. company that's involved in cell phone manufacture, of course, is Apple. And I was very surprised that almost every worker that we interviewed had some connection through their factory back to Apple. I wasn't expecting that. But then when I did some research and looked at the numbers of just, you know, sheer volume of Apple products that are being manufactured in China and sold in the U.S., it began to make sense because the electronic zone in southern China, which is right outside of Hong Kong, is really the base for all of Apple's manufacture. And that's not true for any other cell phone brand. Samsung, the LG, the Korean brands, they produce at least 50% or more in Korea, which is an entirely different environment because they allow trade unions, they have a democratic government, they've got a woman president in South Korea at the moment. People can bring lawsuits against companies. There's a number of lawsuits right now against Samsung for Leukemia has caused deaths in their factories as well. But China, being a communist country, workers just don't have any kind of resources or rights there. And so
Yeah,
it makes
they.
it's a very repressive environment for
They
workers
don't
to
have
find.
unions to protect their rights and safety, right? They don't have
No.
that. But let's get to Apple. Apple is a very highly profitable company, and removing dangerous chemicals from its supply chain isn't that really that expensive and something Apple can easily afford to do. So if the Chinese government is not going to do their part yet, because they will eventually, they will come in line with this, but how can Apple, as such a large corporation, and I do believe they do want to correct this. I really
I
think
do
they
too.
want to help you and us find a way for restitution to the people who need help and to change it so we don't have sick young people. So what are some of the things that they're doing in the United
Well,
States?
yes, they've actually taken leadership on this issue. And I didn't get to the other brands that have been implicated in the factories where we've been interviewing workers. But in addition to Apple, there's been Dell, HP, and Microsoft in particular, and then Nokia and Motorola to a lesser extent. But Apple is the largest, is the leader of the U.S. brands, did take the step in August to, as a result of the trailer that they saw, our YouTube trailer with more than 1 million views, to ban benzene and N-hexane, which are the two chemicals that I focus on in the film, from the final assembly of their products, and they said worldwide.
Excellent. So that's a good start.
It's a
Now,
good start, yes.
yeah, it's a good start. Industry experts have estimated it would cost Apple roughly less than $1 per phone to eliminate the most dangerous chemicals. So it's not that expensive, and they have done that, and they are doing that.
But we
What?
have to point out that it's not through the entire production of the products. They have more control over the very last assembly in their first-tier manufacturers. And so there's two-thirds of their supply chain that's not being affected by this ban. And I also would like to point out they didn't announce a price increase either. So, in fact, they're able to ban both chemicals at no increased price to consumers.
And I know you also say your campaign is not calling for a consumer boycott of Apple products. You are simply, and your group of people who are interested in helping in this area, are asking Apple to just raise our voices together in a cooperative effort so that we can avoid needlessly upgrading these devices faster than technology can make it safe to make them so we can protect workers. Isn't that basically what you're asking people to do?
My goal for the film literally was just to try to persuade the cell phone companies to ban benzene. I didn't even imagine that we'd be able to persuade Apple with just the trailer to ban both chemicals. So I'm very
That's good.
satisfied with that result, and I'm hoping the other brands will follow suit. But we also will have to start, after we finish this project, looking at what the risk to consumers is from using all of these devices that are made with such toxic chemicals
Yeah,
and
people are
heavy
holding
metals.
it to their ears. They're constantly touching it, handling it. There will be a fallout eventually from the overuse of technology. It's not only physically hurting us, it is socially and emotionally creating many problems for our young people using them, not the ones only making them. So there
Yes.
needs to be a greater understanding of how to use technology wisely, effectively, for informing the public, but for not bringing greater disturbances to our development as human beings and our children, the next generation. So we have a lot of concerns around technology right now. Now, when did you first hear about the cases we talked about? How long ago did you start on this project?
I started in January 2013. I headed over to China to research a book, and because of that article that I mentioned I'd read many years ago, I wanted to first research this as the initial chapter in the book, and I'm still working on it.
It's like a giant mushroom. You know, in some areas they grow so big in the forest that they just continuously expand, and other growth is wiped out by it. So it's something that's so big and so timely, and it's not going to go away in the near future. Now, we want to know, what are some of the demands of the Bad Apple campaign? What are they trying to do? What are we trying to eliminate in order of how we can improve this whole industry? I know, number one, we want to eliminate toxic chemicals.
Yes, and I'd just like to point out that I'm the filmmaker who's been doing the research on the chemicals and the impact on workers and telling the stories of the workers in my film. And then there's a separate organization called Green America, which learned about the trailer, one of the people in the room at the conference in San Diego when I first showed it was a senior person at Green America, and she said, oh, we need to do a campaign because Green America is a consumer rights organization and they put pressure on companies to be more responsible in the way that they make their products and how they sell them, and, you know, better business responsibility overall is what they generally focus on. So there's Green America, and then they teamed up with another organization.
That's a big organization, and our listeners can go to greenamerica.org to learn more about the work they're doing, and they are helping you greatly with your project, and I'm so happy for that. I want to thank you, Heather White, for joining me today on Healing From Within, and for your dedicated and tireless work to inform the public of hazardous working conditions in factories producing inexpensive technological equipment to outprice other manufacturers at the expense of safety for young workers. For more information and to view the trailer, go to youtube.com Who Pays Film. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have attempted to share conditions in the factories in China which, if allowed to go unnoticed, will continue to create health issues, death, and undermine our evolution as cooperative and caring members of the world community. In my book, The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, I share how in living my life in the past, only in the materialistic and physical world, I was largely unprepared to discover the deep compassion and love that was at my heart or soul-based essence. In learning about the universal laws of energy, I was able to become a Reiki energy healing practitioner, teacher, and medium, discovering that we are so much more than our physical bodies, our minds, the conditioning patterns and rules of any company or government. Our greatest happiness and purpose for living resides in being of service to others and to correcting any injustice where it may be seen. Heather and I wish you to combine the knowledge of your physical life with the world of spirit, vibrate and function at an empowering level so that we may all work together to ensure good conditions in schools, factories, homes, everywhere, assuming personal responsibility for our own well-being and, where possible, the well-being of every living soul. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to hear inspirational stories of courageous and enlightened leaders in the field of science, spirituality, technology, the arts, education, and business. Please go to CherylGlick.com, WebTalkRadio.net, and DreamVision7Radio.com to hear shows. Thank you very much for listening.